Welcome. And today on episode 10 of Raising Financial Freedom, that's right, episode 10. Wow, how time flies. We have Lane Kawoka, who is an ex-civil engineer who invests passively in real estate from Honolulu, Hawaii. Lane owns about 4,000 units, and he's here to let the parents know how their children can get involved in real estate when the time is ready. So let's get right into it. I think I hear someone calling me.
Dad, hurry up and turn on the music.
Have you ever wondered why some people seem to have it all financially? Do well-off parents simply hand their children money?
Or is there more to this wealth thing?
Welcome to Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. We are here to talk about everything you never knew to teach your children when it comes to starting their financial future. The principles behind wealth and methods that are out there to teach your child about personal financial freedom. There is no real trick to earning other than learning. We are here to discuss, teach, and grow with you. Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast, with your host and concerned parent, Eric Yard. Let us get right into today's show.
I would like to bring to you Lane Kawoka.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. Lane, I would like you for coming on the show today. Let the fans know where you're coming from, because this is a special event, because you're not nowhere near us.
Yeah, I live out here in Honolulu, Hawaii. It's a little expensive out here, but when you buy rental real estate and you can quit your job by all this passive income, you live where you want. And by the way, invest where the numbers make sense, which typically is in California, Washington, or New York, or
right,
Boston.
Right.
That's a little precursor to what we'll talk about today.
Okay. Let's talk about your career. You had a career in construction management. How was the transition from construction management into real estate investment?
Yeah, so I grew up kind of on that linear path. My parents taught me to study hard, go to school. For some strange reason, I was good at math and science when I was like 9. So I became an engineer through college and started working as a construction supervisor and project manager eventually. And my parents never did rental real estate, but I just bought a house to live in, because that was what they said was the way to go. But because I was never home, as most young professionals, you're always working on the road, I decided to rent it out. And that was where I got a taste of this passive income. My monthly mortgage was $1,600 a month. Then my rents that being brought in was $2,200 a month. So for a young 20-year-old kid, that was a lot of beer money. But I quickly realized if I just did this over and over again, this would be my ticket out of the rat race. And so the real estate thing was pretty much a side gig that I did alongside of working my W-2 engineering job for most of a decade.
Okay. What opened your eyes to the fact that you needed to purchase assets like real estate to provide an extra income?
You're just making a lot more money, right? I have on my website, you know, an analyzer people can grab for free, but I have a video on there that's pretty popular about, I break down the returns. With rental real estate, you're making money four ways: with the cash flow from the investment, but also you're making money with the appreciation leverage, 4-to-1, 5-to-1. You're making money with the tax benefits, and you're making money with the tenants paying down your mortgage for you. So you're getting equity buildup. And when I calculated it out on this video, it's well over 30% on some just normal rental property. Nothing too crazy. And then this is where I started to realize, if I'm making 30% here, why the heck am I only making 8% in my 401k stock market stuff, mutual funds? And that was where I started to realize that this system is engineered against the working professional, the middle mm-hmm. class, to invest in these more retail type of investments where most of the gains are being taken out by hidden fees. And this is where I went on this mission to dispel these bad financial advice that, quite frankly, my parents were victims of. Invest in 401ks, invest in mutual funds, invest in your retirement, buy a house to live in. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, I don't agree with that too much either. But on that note, your parents, did they have any involvement in getting you involved with real estate?
No, they never owned rental real estate. They were probably very against it. Their attitude is, you don't want to buy a house and have people live in it and rent it from you, because they'll screw it up. And that was where the buck ended with them. They never looked into it. I didn't have anybody to really help me out. Initially, I just listened to a bunch of podcasts and read some books. And then I eventually met other people doing this. And that was really where my investing took off, is when I started to develop a peer group around me who did the same thing.
So what did it feel like to buy your first property? Can you remember back then?
I bought it to live in, so no different than anybody else. But I think a lot of people buy a house just for the ego thing, because it makes no financial sense to me. Unless you're one of those people who are really bad with their money and needs a forced savings account, it makes no sense. You got to pay this big down payment, and the property just goes up with the pace of inflation. You're not putting money into your pocket. In fact, you have to pay for all these repairs, and when you calculate the opportunity costs of taking that down payment and buying maybe 5 or 6 rentals in the Midwest that are much cheaper, the numbers speak for themselves. Now, I'm an engineer. Dude, math tells you right. What to do.
So when a parent is teaching their child about real estate and they're trying to get that child into real estate, I think there's like 2 forms of investing which a child can get into, like coming right out of the nest, which is rental properties and house hacking. What do you feel about that?
Both are fine. As long as, like the way I said, there's 2 kind of divides in the world in real estate. Most of what you hear about in real estate are the, like, which an HGTV, the house flipping, you know, that's more predicated on appreciation, mm-hmm. right? I'm more on the cash flow side. If the property brings in more rents that exceeds all the expenses, then it's cash flow positive. That's the stuff I'm into. I'm more of a buy and hold investor than a buy something and hope for appreciation. I think both make money, but I feel like cash flow investing is just a little bit more prudent way of going about
can
it.
Can you explain to the listeners what is
and
the rental strategy on top of it?
Yeah, so appreciation investing is buying low, sell high. It makes logical sense, but it's gambling. You never know when the knife's going to fall. The type of investing I do is you buy things that make financial sense on a month-to-month basis. So you may have a bad month here or there, but on the annual basis, you're making money, positive cash flow. So if something happens in the economy, like the prices drop or a pandemic happens, you frankly don't care. Because on a monthly, month-to-month basis, you can hold on to the asset and you can sell it when you want. So it's a very different paradigm. And people will debate left and right for forever. But at this point, I'm more on the cash flow camp. And in a lot of these places to invest in, that you're not going to get cash flow in what I call primary markets, like California, Washington, Hawaii, New York. It's the rent-to-value ratios aren't there to be able to cash flow. We target rent-to-value ratios of 1% or higher. So you figure out the rent-to-value ratio by taking the monthly rents divided by the purchase price. So in a lot of places in California, for example, you'd be lucky to find a place in the ghetto for $400,000 that rents for $2,000 a month. So 2,000 divided by 400 grand is 0.5%. That's not going to work to cash flow. We need a 1% or higher. And so a lot of the places that we target are, it rents for $1,000 a month. That's $100,000 purchase price.
Now, one thing that we didn't get into much was house hacking. This is where your child can purchase a home and live in it for free. Your child can purchase a duplex, triplex, or a quad. These homes are still considered residential. So now your child could live on one unit while renting out the other units in the home. And while the other units are being rented, the mortgage is being paid off by those renters. This was just a quick point. I might have an episode going more into it, but for right now, let's get back to the interview. So what should be the first action step for the parent to be teaching the child in order to start getting into their first rental property or their first duplex or quad in order to do house hacking?
Well, I would figure out, well, is this going to be cash flow positive first? Because if it isn't, then I would not even move forward after that. So people can go to my website and download my analyzer for free. I think it's at simplepassivecashflow.com/analyzer. Mm-hmm. And it's a spreadsheet, and you can just march down the different line items, and you input how much rent you think it's going to be. And then you can deduct all the expenses like repairs, maintenance, capital expenditures, vacancy, third party property management. Because I don't advocate for doing any of the hard work yourself, but to employ professionals to do that type of stuff for you and see if you're cash flow positive. I mean, it's the great way of just walking down properties and intuitively understanding what a rent-to-value ratio is and what is cash flow positive.
So once it's cash flow positive, what's the next step? I would say they found the property, it's flowing cash, it's cash flow positive.
Yeah. So then after you put it under contract, you get a broker, you get a property manager, you walk through the due diligence period, you get an inspector, you get a bank loan on it. The bank is going to go through the title and due diligence checks, and they're going to get an appraisal. But you as an investor need to get that third party inspector on it, and also conference with a property manager who's going to take over the management for you, that you're buying a good asset in a good area. That's going to be a good investment.
Okay. What is the, what you would say is a good age where you start in real estate investing for a child who's just about a young adult, I would say?
I would say start as soon as possible, but like the verbiage is going to be different. They may not understand that a house, like you can rent it. Right. But take something as simple as like a bike. You could buy a bike or you can rent it on a month-to-month basis. I think too often my parents were like this. They told us to buy everything. It's that old school mentality. Right. And I don't know if the parents are going to be the best people to do this. There's a big problem with how people think of finances today that, quite frankly, they're not the person to be teaching this stuff. I know my parents weren't. What they told me was the traditional way of doing things was to go to school, study hard, work at the job for 40, 50 years and put your money blindly into a 401k or mutual fund while Wall Street takes most of your profits.
Right.
Right. The system is engineered to have us do that for good reason. Because if people were to just buy a rental property and save up and buy another one and get on this routine, most of my guys would be able to financially free in less than a decade. That ain't good for an economy, for sure.
Probably not. If the parent does not know much about real estate, where should they point their child to go?
They need to go learn it themselves. I would refer them to my podcast, which is talking more about buy and hold investing for cash flow, or prudent investing, in my opinion. And this is where I've discovered I did rental real estate for quite a while, but I didn't get involved in higher level masterminds with high net worth doctors, lawyers, engineers until I was 7-8 years into the game. And this is where I uncovered the secrets of the wealthy. It's crazy. The wealthy don't pay any taxes. Right. They follow a different subset of financial guidelines, and it's very different than what is my parents taught me and what is the normal conventional wisdom out there. And the frustrating thing for me is like these tactics are not that complicated. They're not something that the average person just can't do, but there's just so much financial dogma out there teaching them otherwise.
Okay. If you had to do it all over again, when would you start and what would you do for your first thing?
I would go out and get educated. A great book out there is Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller. But once you've read that book, you don't need to read anymore. Just go and analyze deals and make sure you're cash flow positive on that deal. And I follow this HR framework of the 70-20-10 rule. A lot of companies will use this where 70% is actually going out there and doing it, making mistakes. Go out and buy a property. See how it works. Right. Analyze it, of course, but see how it works. Did you really cash flow? Oh, next time you're going to do it a little bit different. And the next time you're going to do it a little bit more, even more differently. Go back to the 70-20-10 rule. 20% is your peer group, your network. I don't work with anybody unless I have a referral from somebody I trust. And then the 10% is the actual academic learning, the podcast, the book that I referred you to. That is, I think people think that's the majority of it, but it really is only the 10%. A lot of this is just by learning by doing. And quite frankly, this stuff isn't that hard, but it's buried within a whole bunch of other, you know, wrong information out there, which is frustrating.
When it comes to analyzing, and you said you had a tool for that on your website, how long does that take? And what are some of the key points in analyzing a property when it's cash flow?
The first time you do it might take a little while, but I can knock through that thing in 2 minutes these days. It's easy. Part of it is after a while, you heuristically learn it. You get a feel for what's going to cash flow and what's not. I can look at the monthly rent and the purchase price and know if I'm going to cash flow based on the area. But that's why you made the analyze so people can go line by line and get a feel for the ranges of each of these things. We have footnotes in there, and this is free. There are no games there. It's not like some kind of, there's so much scammy things, especially in the world of real estate and passive income, that I just want to make everything for free so that people can actually learn about this stuff. But it takes some cojones to go out and buy something. But unless you buy something, you're never going to learn.
Yeah, you got to jump in that water. You got to jump right in and just get your hands dirty. What's the biggest challenge you had to overcome in real estate?
Just saving money. The type of investing I do is boring. we don't take too much chances. We're limited by how much money we can save. And when I was an engineer, I was pretty frugal. So I was able to save most of my paycheck to go put to investing. And that's what limits a lot of my investors, is just how much money they can save every year. You know, if they can save $20,000, $30,000, that is a down payment to one rental. And then you save the next one, and you save the next one. I didn't get up to 11 rentals until I was in this game for about 7 years. I bought my first rental in 2009, and then I got up to 11 in 2015. But the more you buy, the more passive cash flow checks you put into your pocket that helps you buy even more. And that's where this thing is. It's not really a get rich quick scheme, but it's a get rich surely thing.
Speaking of rentals, explain to the listeners, what is a turnkey rental?
Yeah, there's a lot of daunting things and question marks I'm sure people have right now. One of the ways of getting around that is to buy what's called a turnkey rental. So these rental properties are in the areas that cash flow, where a house flipper will go in, they'll buy a distressed property, fix it up, put in new flooring, new appliances, new roof, they'll revamp all the electrical plumbing, and sometimes they'll even put a tenant in there for you. It's like investor training wheels for you. It's about as turnkey as easy. It's where the term turnkey comes from. So you can step right into a property with a tenant in place and cash flow in place. You might pay a little bit more for this, but you're still going to be, I still think it's 2 or 3 times better than what you're going to get in the stock market, which is crazy.
Okay. What is the best thing that has happened to you since you started?
I would say pretty quickly, a few years into all this game, I started to develop into a really bad employee because I started to realize, why would I want to work like 50% harder for a measly 10% more pay at my day job, where I could just go and buy, save up my money for a year or two and buy a rental property and kind of make that extra 10% bump in pay forever for the rest of my life without having to do anything. And then eventually you just keep doing that. And I quit my day job as an engineer that I didn't really particularly like. Feel like amazing. Not many people can do that. You can now, at that point, you have the freedom, the financial freedom to do what you want, where you want, with whom you want, and on your terms. That freedom allows you to take down your goals. Money's not everything, but it sure makes life a lot easier. It gives you more options.
It sure does. How would you, do you have kids?
No, not yet.
Just to say you did have kids. How would you like them to start into real estate?
I think I would just start off by just teaching them the value of money, right? Comes and goes, and some people work for it. Some people are you're either trading your time for it, or you're buying assets that produce money for you. I'm certainly, for one, who's been around a lot of people who are trust fund kids, and I'm sure as heck not going to give them money, but I'm going to try my best to teach them the real ways for them to make money. And then doesn't necessarily mean trading their time for it. I think in the beginning, everybody has to trade time for money, but the smart people are the people who trade time for money to buy things like rental properties that put money in their pocket perpetually.
What is the one resource you use the most in purchasing real estate or any type of asset? Mostly that's the asset you purchase the most.
I would say your peer group. You got to get around other people doing this stuff. Talking to the people in your cubicle land ain't going to help, because they're all talking about the wrong stuff. They're all talking about their pension or what their Social Security is going to be or what their 401k is, or they're talking about some nonsense about them day trading throughout the day. It's your peer group. It's getting around people that are actually doing this stuff. And a lot of times they're quiet about it because it works.
So what peer groups do you suggest a parent to get into in order to just get more knowledgeable? Do you have any peer groups yourself?
Yeah, I would suggest like going and just listen to podcasts first and talking about what you're doing, because a lot of people are doing rental real estate. Unfortunately, a lot of them are doing it the wrong way, in my opinion, where they're buying properties for appreciation base and not for cash flow. But once you get into the sphere, which is a minority part of the population anyway, you'll find your tribe. It took me a long time to find those cash flow based investors out there, where most investors that are real estate investors are more appreciation based, who do it wrong, in my opinion. But you got to buy your first rental property first. Yeah. Focus on that.
What is the one thing that people don't realize about real estate?
The tax benefits. This is how you pay no taxes. I mean, the wealthy don't pay taxes. They invest a heck of a lot of money into the economy, which is why the tax code incentivizes them to do so. I think that's a big misnomer. People think of people, when people say they pay no taxes, they think they're jerks. They're not doing their part. But no, they're the ones putting their money and their money where the mouth is and infusing capital into this country. Where the people who pay taxes, they have to pay taxes because they sit on their money under their mattress earn the home equity of their house, not doing anything. That's why they pay taxes.
In detail, what kind of taxes are they saving when they use in real estate as that vehicle?
Yeah, so everybody has to pay based on how much income they bring in. They have to. There's a tax bracket. But real estate investors, we get a lot of passive losses from our investments. For example, when you own a rental property, you can deduct 1/27th of the value of the property of the building value every year. So it's a phantom paper loss. You get enough of those properties, that can be substantial.
Now, you're a young teenager, you're going out into the world. How much money do you think they should have saved up to start?
To buy a rental property, bare minimum, I think you're going to try and target like an $80,000, $100,000 property. 20% down payment and maybe $5,000 for cash reserves, or maybe looking at $20,000 to $30,000 is what you need. And this is what I like about it. There's a barrier to entry, whereas anybody can buy a Bitcoin for, I don't know, $10 or some incremental part of Bitcoin. I like to do things where there's a barrier to entry and there's not a lot of competition. Right? Like real estate, you need to buy a house, you need 20, 30 grand. This is why I like to invest in apartment buildings today, because the barrier to entry is even much higher.
Mm. What is the one hidden pitfall that prevents people from succeeding in real estate?
Probably they just can't save money. They're already cash strapped. And a lot of the time is because they've fallen victim to the age old of buy your house to live in. That makes the mortgage companies happy and the real estate agents happy. But it absolutely screws you for the rest of your life.
Does.
And some people just are unable to save money. Might be for various reasons, or could just be frankly that they're just unable to control their financial personal budgets. A lot of people that are in my tribe are good financially, whereas they're frugal. They don't buy things that they don't need. So there's excess. But to take it to the next level is they need to take that money and buy assets that produce more income for them, such as rental real estate.
So you say your tribe. Can you explain who's your tribe?
Yeah, so a lot of people that listen to my podcast, they start to realize that we don't think like most people. The Thanksgiving comes and everybody's talking about their stocks and mutual fund portfolios. And we roll our eyes. This is not the way to go. Unless you want to make Wall Street executives rich, it ain't the way to go. It's a counterculture. Right. So I put together this tribe of, we do virtual masterminds and in-person masterminds. But if they want to learn more, they can go to my website, check us out. But yeah, you got to find your group of people, right? Just like any other group, there's a kind of a group doing it and you need a peer group. How else are you going to find projects to invest in, who to work with, which property managers are good, which brokers are useful?
So tell me how the real estate played a part in you developing your philosophy about investing point blank.
Real estate is just, I don't really particularly like real estate, but it provides three things. It provides cash flow. It's a hard asset. And it's leverageable. There's not many things out there. I don't know if you can think of anything, but that hits on all those three. And cash flow is what allows you to eat today. It puts food on the table today. And this is one of the biggest problems with normal financial wisdom, where we're taught mostly, this is the incorrect stuff, we're taught about this accumulation theory. So they tell you on your retirement, you need to build up a certain amount of nest egg, maybe $2 or $4 million to live off of. But the way our philosophy is, it's opposite. We need to create streams of income, micro streams of income, so that we can accelerate getting to that big number. And it's not this delayed gratification forever. It's take the money and take that streams of income, and you can use it to go to Disneyland. You can use it to buy a nice car if that's what you so choose. But so many of us in our tribe get so addicted to the pursuit and getting there so much quickly than other people that a lot of the overflow just goes to buying more and more properties, more and more assets that accelerates getting there.
Yeah, everyone quicker. Wants to get there quick. No one wants to wait anymore. And that's just not the route to go. So you said you don't really like real estate. Why is that? And what do you like as an asset?
I do. Real estate just gets me there the best. It hits on all those three things I mentioned. I don't really particularly like it is what I'm saying.
I see.
But I don't care. I'm agnostic. Whatever is going to get me there the fastest and the most conservative is the path I'm picking. There's nothing that gets me super excited about, four walls. And, to me, they're commodities.
Is there any asset out there that you do that really gets you excited?
I don't think anything has a better risk reward profile better than real estate, especially if you're sticking to workforce housing type of rental property. You're renting it out to the average American, which we need more of this. They're not making many more real estate. There's a housing shortage. So guys that are renting from $700 to $1,100 a month. You know, I think you're staying in that realm. I don't think you can go wrong. Through this pandemic, I have 4,200 rental units. We're collecting still in the high 90 percentile of our rents. And a lot of time we buy these assets at such a point where as long as we can stay above 50, 60%, we're still in the black. We're still making money. This pandemic has shown us that rental real estate, especially workforce housing rental real estate, is one of the most robust asset classes out there.
So you have properties spread out, what, in the Midwest, I would say?
Yeah, mostly in the South, Midwest, okay. Southeast. Yeah, nothing in, we try and stay away from blue states, not from any political affiliation, but we as the landlords enjoy being in places where the laws are on our side.
Okay.
And the thing is, a lot of places that we buy, let's put it this way, we're not in the socialist capital of California. A lot of people will have a little bit different work ethic out in the South, in the Midwest. And maybe that was the way I got grown up. If you can't pay, you can't stay. Imagine that. Mm. So this is the places that we like tend to invest. Where people can't pay, we're going to go through the eviction process. And it's not going to take 6 months to get somebody out. A lot of places like Georgia, 30 day, you're gone. Sheriff comes up at your door.
Wow. Yeah, laws are different from state to state. And I do understand why.
Right.
How did you overcome your fear of that little voice in your head telling you, hey, buying property, it's scary? And what would you tell the listeners how to overcome that same voice that they're going to get in their head when they're analyzing their first property and trying to make that first purchase?
Yeah, the biggest fear, you're going to probably be buying a place that you're not going to be able to visit. It's going to be a remote property. A lot of properties I don't even visit. A lot of my students, they don't visit their properties. It's remote because they may not be in the best place to live or to invest. So that's going to be, to just hit it on the head right there, that's going to be the thing that they need to overcome. But many people have done it in the past. And that's why you employ teams to get you there. Like you have a property manager to watch the asset for you and to do all the busy work for you. And at the end of the day, it's like, all right, you don't want to do it. Cool. Then keep working at your day job for 40, 50 years. And because we know what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen if you keep investing your money in a bad tax advantage method at 8%. But if you want to try this out where many people have gone down this path and hit success and you're buying a cash flowing asset that produces cash flow every single month, to me, I don't know how much more prudent you can get. But this isn't for everybody. If it was, right. It wouldn't be so good, right? Financial freedom is not for everybody. Financial freedom is for the worthy, people who want to get out of their comfort zone and do something a little bit different.
Yeah, you definitely have to be uncomfortable and be ready to stay uncomfortable by going through the process. So can you let the listeners know what programs, once they go to your website, you may have listed there or some of the books you may have on your website?
Yeah, they can go to my podcast. A lot of that information is for free, especially buying your first rental property remotely. I would say the first 8 podcasts were all about that. Lately, I've been becoming more of an accredited investor, so I've been talking more about syndications, private placements, infinite banking, tax and legal strategies. But yeah, if you're starting out, that's a good place to start. The podcast is Simple Passive Cashflow, and then the website is simplepassivecashflow.com. I would just peruse the website, sign up for the club, and yeah, open your mind up to this new world.
Okay, Lane. I want to thank you for coming out today on the show. You provided a lot of gems today. And once again, let them know the main website for them to visit.
SimplePassiveCashflow.com.
SimplePassiveCashflow.com. Thank you, Lane. Two good points I could take from that interview that really stuck with me. If you, the parent, don't know about a particular topic, get educated or put your child into the right group if they have a particular interest. This is one of the main reasons why Raising Financial Freedom was started. So the parent could get more involved and more educated when it comes to things like this. The other point that I got from the interview was that real estate is a wealth builder. Point blank. It is a good wealth builder. And if your child gets this asset underneath their belt early, this will be a great thing for them. Now, coming up next week, we have a financial advisor who just published a new book for kids. So we are definitely going to get into that. And he's going to share some of his views on raising financial freedom. So as always, share with other parents. If they don't know about the show, send them a link. If they don't want the link, take their phone and download a podcast player and subscribe to my show. Also, rate where you can. That will really help out the show. And stay tuned to next week.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. Stay connected with us directly through raisingfinancialfreedom.com. You can also join the discussion on social media, which you can also find links on our website. If you would like to speak with us, please send us an email through info@raisingfinancialfreedom.com. And as always, thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. This concludes the most thought-provoking portion of your day. Don't forget to please like and subscribe to stay fully up to date. Until next time, be kind to yourself and each other.